so you could give some insight to our test group as to perhaps along the line of religious perspective for modern man, or perhaps the purpose of life, both here at life and beyond, from your point of view, if it would be helpful to us from our perspective.
Yes. Well, first I greet you all. I feel the difficulty in answering a question of this nature in a particular group situation is that various ones will be seeking different answers. But I would like to say that I will give the answer in the highest degree that I perceive, and those that can hear will hear, and those that cannot will someday also come to hear. The question that our side of the light would like to impress upon all of the human consciousness is simply that the purpose of life is not at all what your perception would tell you it was. From your human perception, looking out through eyes, physical eyes, you perceive life and its importance as being bound up in family, work, love, in the personal sense, in the children sense, in the mate sense, or in love of parents, or love of country, or love of good works, or however it manifests to you. Now, while no one on this side of the light would say that these are wrong motives, they would say that as long as you believe this illusion, you will not be able to fully participate in the broad ongoing teaching that the planet provides for you. What is meant by this is simply that your eyes lie to you. You are using, most of you are using the wrong vehicle to see with. The vehicle that you are called upon to see with is an inner vehicle that has no form of which you are aware. It is made up of spirals of energy fields, which we will not go into, because when your eyes, when your inner eyes are developed enough to see them, then you will know within your own mind what you're perceiving. But just let me say that when these inner eyes open, you will then perceive the world totally differently from the way you do now. And in that new perception, you will become one with all of the great truths that the greatest of the teachers have passed down to you. You say, all of you, or some of you, you say countless times, all is one. There's only one reality. But if you are being honest, and if you will look carefully at your mind, you will observe that your thoughts deny that you truly believe it. You act constantly in opposition to this basic idea. Indeed, you act not only as if you were separate, but that as if your mind is separate from other minds. It is bad enough to think that your body is separate from other bodies, but on top of this illusion, you compound it by feeling that your mind is somehow a separate entity from the rest of the mind in the world. We would like to say that this is an illusion created by the ego for its own use, and if you choose to continue, that's fine. This is a matter of choice. There are certain delights to be found in seeing oneself as separate. Some of these delights are obvious. For example, if you happen to be in a fulfilling personal relationship, then you see the obvious delight of feeling a one-to-one love. On the other hand, it must be seen clearly that if you move from a fulfilling relationship to areas of that relationship that are not fulfilling, then watch carefully what your mind does, because your mind then says, ah, it is simply this particular relationship that has gone sour. So now I will go out and find another personal relationship that will then be meaningful to me. And so goes. Time after time, life after life, relationship after relationship, one forgets and puts aside the pain and the suffering and forgets that the purpose of life is to understand that you are not an ego. It is as simple as that. The purpose of everyone in this room is to come to the awareness that you are not now and have never been an ego. I am very aware, having been an incarnate for myself, I'm very aware of the tremendous pull of the illusion. But having moved out of that illusion, I have come to tell you that it can be done. And if you are still caught in the illusion, rest assured it is because it is giving you something that you deeply want. So don't beat your chest and cry to the gods and say, you are not fulfilling me, you are not showing me the way. The way is always there. But most of you, if you would be honest, would see that you are very content on some deep level with what you are doing. It feeds you in some way. It makes you feel important. And you see, if all is one, then no one is any more important than anyone else. And this is something that the ego refuses to see. The ego maintains its power over you by promising you a special state. You are special if you are a separate ego. If you are not a separate ego, you see, then where is your specialness? Where does your specialness lie? It doesn't exist. And that is something that the ego screams at. So please be very aware that you get precisely what you want, that what your life is now is what you choose it to be, that the instant that you choose differently, doorways will open. We cannot tell you which doorways, because when the time comes, the combination of energies will be there for you and you will begin to experience something else. A way will open, but nothing can be done on our side until you ask. And I don't mean a superficial kind of a whimpering, but a real soul call. Any true soul call is always answered, and answered instantaneously. So I realize that many on the so-called spiritual path tend to feel that they are in some way special from the rest of mankind. This is a misuse of the spiritual quest. Anything that makes you feel any way different from every other man is a misuse, because there is no real difference. But we tend to use these devices when one is in a body. We use these devices to separate ourselves. And I would ask you all to be extremely careful about this. Some of you are in marriage relationships or in non-marriage but close relationships with mates. And herein lies one of the greatest misuses of the spiritual quest, which is the insidious feeling that you emanate to your mate that makes them feel less. And I would like to say that it is, things are not always as they seem. For example, the long-suffering mate who continually stays home and takes care of the family so that the other party can go out to meetings, it is questionable, you see, who is really the more caring and the more dedicated. So be very careful in all of your thought processes as you go through these pathways, that you don't take on the really deadly habit of thinking yourself exalted because you have some glimmering of a spiritual truth.
The overall meaning of life, earth life, and beyond earth life. You did say that it was to get beyond the ego. I think it was a statement that you made as being a major purpose. But can you express anything regarding the overall purpose further than what you already said?
I think that several members of the group are interested in what happens beyond the event that you call death. And there's much written about this state. Most of it is erroneous, because in order to see these things, words have to be used, symbols have to be called on that really do not exist in a parallel fashion on the other side. So much of it is filtered and very foggy and therefore misleading. I think it's a fair assumption that most people, unless they are highly developed, highly aware, have an underlying fear of death and the whole process and the other waking on the other side, as they call it. So, with that in mind, I will do my best, but again, one has to understand that the symbols given are going to be misrepresented by the woman because she simply doesn't have the ability to translate these things for you. But let me just say that the moment of transition varies greatly with the person going over. And the degree of fear is commensurate with the, disorientation that is experienced. Some humans pass over with absolutely no change of perception, but they're very rare. Now, the main thing that you have to keep in mind is that when you move over to the other side, your consciousness does not explode into a tremendous difference than it was on this side, because, you see, there really is no other and here. It's all the same. But in order to make any sense at all, we speak in these terms. But when the transition is being made, the general tendency of the human is to concentrate on the body form as long as it can. It is deeply suggested that those of you who can free yourself of that and keep your awareness of your consciousness as your primary function at that time, that will be a tremendous help to you. Because you see, there is only fear in the body sense. There is no fear in the consciousness sense, because the consciousness does not change. There's no alteration in your consciousness when you die. So if you want to keep the flow of continuity as much as you can and do your best to learn about this process as you're going, then the suggestion is to really let the body take care of itself and do whatever it is destined to do, and keep your awareness highly concentrated as power packed as you can in your consciousness. Now, on the other side, it will differ. It is really difficult to make any statement about this type of thing. It is fair to say that what you envision it will be like, so will it be for a limited period of time. Because one of the great things that you will learn is that the mind creates. And as you are creating this type of a reality on the other side, you will realize that this is what's happening, that your mind is creating something. But be that as it may, there isn't too much to say. It'll all be taken care of. That is the primary thing that I think is of importance to all humans. It's to get a really deep feeling and knowledge within that just as you are sustained by the divine force while you're in body form, you are sustained by the divine force when you are not. So the degree to which all of the people in this room spend the rest of their life here creating this very definite, concrete almost awareness of their oneness with the divine force that is pulsating through them constantly, the less fear there will be, the less change there will be, the greater expanding and experience, the greater the experience will be on the other side. By that I mean it will not be as limited. Someone who goes over with limitations as to who they are will experience those limitations to some degree on the other side. But the ones who have really worked at feeling the tremendous harmony that sings through their being here, now, in body form, we'll find that it is a continuing process, and that it isn't even so much even going, as they say, from one room to another. Even that is too much of a limitation. What does free them so much is the dropping of all of the physical, which is a tremendous relief. And this is what they experience as such a lightening, because the physical vehicle, it can be very cumbersome.
Yes. I think those last comments failed to get on the tape. Now, I'm sorry to ask you to repeat the material on the family relationships and the parents and children. But I think it gave some points that would be quite important to some others.
Are we ready?
Yes.
Would you ask the question again?
Yes. What can you suggest the best way for parents to help their children?
Well, I'll make it a little more concise this time, but basically, I would like to suggest to everyone who is a parent or is thinking of becoming a parent that their primary consideration must be to, if they wish to be truly successful in this, in the rearing of children who will be in harmony and who will have a joyful relationship to life, that the thing that they really must do, if they find it in themselves to do, is to develop this day and the next day and all days henceforward a actual living relationship with the wisdom that is available in the moment. Now, this is a very specific thing and not something vague. Most of parents, when they find that they are going to become a parent, or if the child is already born, or if some difficulty looms ahead, they rush around and they read books on so-called experts. And the data that they receive seems to them to be helpful in some degree or other. But if they were paying attention, they would realize that there is no particular way in an overall sense of knowing how to respond to each instance problem. Now, there is a way. You see, you are not alone. None of you have been left alone here to battle your way to awareness alone of what's right to you, I mean, that would be a very unfortunate, chaotic kind of a universe that you were thinking of. But the fact remains that most of you enjoy this separate feeling, as we've talked about before. You enjoy a sense of being a separate entity, and you enjoy the power of making your own decisions. And as long as that is what you want, then by all means, continue to make your own decisions, to decide every detail down to the last as to what you should do for your child. But for those of you who have come to the understanding through watching your own life, that perhaps you have made some mistakes, that perhaps things could have been handled in a better way. Now, if you are one of those, this is for you. If you really have come to this understanding, and if you are really in enough love state with the child to truly wish to serve that child the best you can, then I say to you, the best thing you can do is to develop your tuning device so that the wisdom that is pulsating around you constantly will be able to record itself in you, and therefore you will know what to do. You see, it is not a mystery. There are no mysteries here. Man beats his breast and screams to the sky and says, I don't know what to do. Well, that's because his mind has not been able to think of an answer. But rest assured, the answer is there. And for parents, we are particularly concerned with the raising of children in this age and the next few ages to come, because a lot depends on that, which is another subject. But a lot depends on what happens to these next few generations. And so any of you who can hear, we would ask you to hear this. In the moment when your mind is stilled and you are totally attuned to what is present in this moment, with no encumbrances of past thoughts, with no desire beating at you, but simply in the quiet of each moment, you will be able to speak the things that need to be spoken. You will be able to think the thought that should be thought, and you will perform what the Buddhists would call a right action. Now, your mind is incapable of knowing what is right action for everyone in a certain area. At least, I think that is true of all in this room. There are some human beings, of course, who have transcended, but basically the human condition is one of having a very narrow awareness of what is the best thing to do. So if you choose to be in love and harmony with the total plan, and then know that all will be served at the highest, it is a very simple matter. You must learn to constantly stop your thought process, to place yourself totally, wholly, receptively in the moment, and listen. You know, all the great books have said it, and you don't hear it. They say, God speaks. And you know, most people don't understand that. They don't believe it. And the reason that they cannot experience the voice of God, or the voice within, or however you choose to say it, the reason they cannot experience it is because they're too busy talking. Now, by this I mean mental talking in the form of thinking, mental fantasies, hopes, fears, past, future. All of these things tend to fill you to such an extent with your own material that God simply cannot get through. There is no one in a body that cannot, if they seek it, hear the voice of God. No one. And if you doubt me, then I will give you a challenge. Spend the rest of your life trying. And when you cross over the other side, tell me. I'll be there.
Good afternoon.
There's a window on you.
You're ready for questions?
I am.
The first question the woman has, she wonders whether you would tell her a little bit more about your relationship with her.
Well, that's a very healthy sign. I've been waiting and hoping that something of this nature would come up, because one of the things that I've been concerned about was her lack of inquisitiveness about me and my relationship to her. In the past, the questions have come from you, questions that you have raised, if I'm remembering correctly. And she hadn't asked on her own. I consider this a healthy question, because it means that she is accepting me in a way that I think she has had difficulty doing in the past. So I'm glad to speak some about this relationship. Basically, what I think she needs to know, and the question that is foremost in her mind, is, I think in her terminology, would be, am I her friend? And of course, this is very true statement. I've been her friend for a long time. It is also true that I am her teacher, but the thing that she's beginning to sense is the thing that is closest to the truth, I think, which is that until such time as she can stand in relationship with the divine, I stand closer to her and therefore serve as a channel for her. So, in a sense, I am just a vehicle at her disposal, and I think it would be helpful for her to look at it this way. Her big concern, of course, as should be, is the concern of being taken over to such an extent that there would be no feeling of her own self in this process. I think that the more she realizes that this is just simply as I am a channel, she is a channel, and that it all comes from the one source. So if you could tell her that, I think she'd feel better about the whole experience that she's undergoing, because she has had a very hard time of it. But as we said before, this is very healthy. We would be very, very unhappy if she were terribly taken over with it, terribly obsessed with it, and this would indicate a tremendous degree of ego involvement, which would be troublesome for us. Mm-hmm. But this isn't true in her case, and I think it's healthy, and in no way do I wish to discourage her checking out of the data, her keeping alert to what is true that I speak and what is not true. She needs to do this, and I think it's healthy. So if you tell her that for me.
Thank you. And I might ask, do you experience yourself in a form? Does your consciousness take on a form that seems separate as ours does on our plane?
Well, what really is this is difficult to say, but what it is a very compact. If you could see me, if this is the question, if you could see me, if I could materialize myself for you, I would be a very compact energy unit, mm-hmm. you see. I would be very, very compact. And I wouldn't look to you, perhaps, like a form, because you're used to a very different form, but I would be very, very compact, very liquid, very movable. I don't hold to any particular form at any time, because thought changes that form instantaneously, and so therefore, if I have a thought of one thing, I can move into that form. Mm-hmm. Do you understand?
I think so.
It's a very fluid area.
We're told that consciousness always has to have a form through which it can manifest or express.
This is very true.
This is very true.
Yes, it's very. I mean, when you speak in terms of the one or the vast void or whatever, that, of course, the both are true, because once you have placed yourself in total relationship with the divine, once you, if I may use the word, merge yourself into that then your consciousness can move into infinite realms and change its form, you see. It's interesting that the myths that your culture, not particularly the United States culture, but the Earth cultures have created, some of the fantasy stories are about people that transform from one shape to another. You use it from toads to princes and so forth. But actually, this is a statement of fact. Mm-hmm. And on the higher realms, it's tremendously freeing and very creative to be able to change form. And one of the tremendous helps of it is that one doesn't become attached in any way, mm-hmm. you see, yeah. as perhaps the physical vehicle doesn't land into this because it seems so stable, you know, so yeah. ongoing.
Did this answer your question? Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Then the next question that the woman has, should I continue to leave the house for the weekend when Craig Ratzner comes to visit?
Well, it's good for her. She won't like to hear this, but it's fine. I think that I hesitate very much to make any predictions for future events. But I think it's safe to say that this obsession on her husband's part will soon end. I think that the advent of the new house, which has just come into their life, will make a difference to him. It will give him something to do. I think he will begin to move out of that tremendous influence. And so I say, if it's necessary, if she asks her husband and he says, yes, I want you to go, then I think by all means she should do so, and do so happily. Mm-hmm. You know, do so with freedom and say, fine, I understand, this is your need, beautiful, I'll go and do something, you know, that mm-hmm. that is important to me. And not to make it up into a very large occasion. If she looks at it with the right perception, she can have a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. You know, she can either come here to be with you, she can go to other people, or she can simply go on her own somewhere, a place with a swimming pool perhaps that her daughter would enjoy. You know, if she looks at it in a positive way, she can have a great deal of fun. Yeah. So I think she should do this. Now, the thing that also would be helpful is spend a little money when she goes.
Mm-hmm.
Tell her that.
Yeah.
Tell her that.
Yeah.
Make your husband change his mind.
Yes.
Make an outing of it.
Yes. I mean, just let her, you know, spend a little money.
Yeah. The next question is, do you have a short message that could be given to Alice Reiner? The one you gave before was not advisable
uh-huh.
to be given.
Uh-huh. Well, yes, I think it would be nice because I think she's waiting for something. So, let me think a moment on Alice. It's harder, you see, when it's people that are not directly connected with the speaker that she's following.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what we should tell her is that we greet her with great love, and that we are aware of the difficulties that are at work in her life, that there have been various times in her life when we were very close to breaking through and making a real contact with her, but at these crucial times, something within her has withdrawn and closed it off. And so we are very hopeful that with this advent of her new direction, this so-called course that she is going to take up, that we are very hopeful that this will be the vehicle that will be used so that we can make this contact with her. That there's a great deal that we would like to bestow on her. We would like to lighten her tremendous mood problems of dark moods that she can get into, and if she has great trouble in lifting. And we would be very helpful in lifting these, and indeed would be very happy to help. But so far, no real connection has been made that allows us to do that. Now, the situation is quite different with her husband, and this is one reason why his moods are so much lighter than hers. It's not any inherent dark astrological placement, which is how she tends to look at it, it's not that at all. But the fact is that her husband has spent a great deal more time and energy with a thrust towards making a very fine and useful hookup, and he has done so. But she has not devoted the same time, and therefore her moods are much deeper and harder to raise because she's working virtually alone. But this is her choice, and we would so welcome a change in this because there's so much that we would like to begin to teach her and share with her, and we would like to assist her in the most direct way possible. So tell her that we love her and that we're with her, and hoping that all will begin to move and lighten for her in the ensuing year.
Thank you. You spoke of getting through to her. Is there any way that my wife and I, either or both of us, can be more open to guidance?
Well, it's not the same situation at all. I can't equate that kind of quake, the three of you at all. It's a matter of, let me compare. It's like a light bulb that's turned on when we speak of you two, and a light bulb that's turned off when we speak of Alice. I think I have really nothing terribly concrete to say. I hope you're not disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just that continuing on. Now, of course, all of the data that was given in the last 2 days, I'm sure you both heard it and you both understood instantly the thrust of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And as with every other being who has not reached the final state of total awareness, we do always recommend this. Both of you do it in varying degrees of efficiency at varying times of the year, mm-hmm. at varying times of the day, so forth. But this is very normal with fluctuation. But by all means, if you would like to make any change at all, or not even a change, a continuance, I would suggest a much more hopefully consistent remembrance of the moment,
mm-hmm.
and to place yourself in the power of that moment. I can use the word power with you both because it is not something that you would misuse.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a word I would recommend you to use to your group.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Power is a very loaded word in your environment.
The moment itself has the power, not we.
That's exactly right, sir, and that's why we can use it with you. But to other people, they translate it as something that they possess.
Yes.
And this makes for great misuse.
Another question the woman has, how do
Can
any
we
of
have
us,
a glass of water yes. for this?
How do any of us, question is, how do any of us best discover what jobs we should be in, what kind of work we should be doing, what particular job, I suppose?
I think this is one of the, as I observe human life, I would say this is one of the major questions that humans have, and very few of them think to ask about it. So I'm very pleased that this one was raised, because there are a few things that can be said. Now, the first and foremost, I think, that there must be an understanding within a person that oftentimes a job that they have, they look on it as something God has given them to do. Let us take an example of a clerk in a Safeway store. Now, many people, if say this person was on the so-called spiritual path, they would tend to look on that job as something God has given them, you see, and therefore they stay in it and so on. Now, this is a great misconception, because oftentimes, you see, what the higher forces want, above all, is for you to move with creative joy. This is one of their main aims. And one of the things that best helps a person in a body to have joy and creative awareness is to having a so-called job that they enjoy doing. So I would say to someone who is in a job they really don't like, I mean, not just a marginal, if you understand, but someone who is totally unhappy in their job, the chances are, no, that they have placed themselves there on their own limitations. And if they would begin to look within themselves and ask, you know, again, we come back to the same thing. Most people in job situations are there because they're either comfortable, or they're convenient, or they're afraid of any further expansion for fear they won't be able to handle the new responsibilities. You see, there are many, many reasons. A fear of a decrease in income, or a loss of prestige to take a job, a lesser job will destroy their prestige. You see, these are all ego questions, ego attributes. And so the first thing that should be done is a very serious consideration, as deeply as they can, why am I here? Is it because I am afraid? So on, you know, considering all these possibilities. And to look deeply at these questions, not asking other people, because other people can't answer them. If a woman has a prestige problem and would prefer to be in a poorly paid prestige position, she's getting what she wants, you see. Now, when the paycheck arrives, then she's unhappy. But most of the time, she's pleased, because her biggest desire is to be in a prestige situation. All right, so that's one type of answer. I hope I've covered that sufficiently. Mm-hmm. But the first job is to look critically, to remove the veil from the real situation, your own motivation, why you're doing what you're doing. If you find at the core of it that you really, the reasons that you're there are very superficial, arrogant, or fearful, or egotistical, or whatever, then you are open to go to the second stage. Now, the second stage is then you say, well, what? What is in all this world would I want to do? There's so many opportunities, there's so many choices. Well, that's really not the truth. If they will look at their environment, they will see that they have certain limitations that they must work in. They have a certain amount of money they must pull in. They have a certain ability. You know, you cannot be a president of a corporation if you've never had any background. And God is not interested in placing everybody in corporate positions, you see. That is not one of the... you see, they keep placing on God functions that are not his, that he never wanted, and has nothing to do with, you see, in a real sense. You get what you want. Believe me, the same law applies to all of the things that we've discussed, and it equally applies with your relationships, and it applies with your job, it applies in all these things. You're getting something that you want in any situation that you're in. So, if you discover after the self-analysis, so these people do, that it applies to you too, but certainly to the speaker, it applies to her, and to anyone else. If you really deeply look at the situation and realize that the motives are not very exalted, and you wish to move on, then the second phase is simply a constant paying attention to a movement within your life. Now, oftentimes, the committee, as you call them, the forces, as I would call them, place before you, like a carrot before the nose of a donkey, an opportunity. This can come in the form of something they read in the paper. I mean, we use the physical medium, you see, to teach you. All of the things don't have to come through beautiful astral notes of harmony. No, I mean, we use what is there. And so we use newspapers, we use other people, you know, we use the radio, the television, and if they have made up their mind that they want to make a change, now they don't run out, quit the job, and sit around and wait for the committee to give them a new job, you see. But what they do is they've made up their mind that their motives are wrong. They make the best of what they're in, you see. They don't drop everything and move on. They make the best of what you're in. And then they keep all of their antenna out in listening. They listen within, and they listen without. They listen to people. They talk. In other words, they've decided to make a change. Now the question remains, what are they going to move into? The word, I'm speaking of very literal translation. Now, it is true can also hear higher voices, yes, and they will do so as they move along. But let's just take the beginning stages here. The person who integrates their whole life around the idea that there is a higher wisdom that can help them, that they are willing and lovingly going to surrender and submit to, and to turn their life over to it, what that means, very simply, when they say, what do you mean? I know the speaker has asked questions often about surrender and what this means. And she had tremendous trouble with it when she was in a relationship with Swami Joshi. Tremendous trouble with this word surrender. What did this mean? So I think this is a good time to speak to this point so that she can better understand it, and maybe it will help anyone else. I have no idea what Mr. Joshi meant himself. I can only tell you that from our perception, what surrender means is, first, coming to the understanding that you yourself, as a human entity with a limited mind and limited understanding, that you are not capable of making the best possible choice. Two, having made this understanding very clear to yourself, being willing to call on a source outside and within. You think of it as outside, actually very much within yourself. Something to call on a higher force to aid you. Now, when step number two is called upon, most of you do not believe this, and we understand that. So where people get confused is they think that they can't move into stage two because they don't have sufficient faith, you see, that the process will work. And we say, don't worry about that. What we want is just as much cooperation, whatever little bits you can do, do. And we will fill in the gap. You see, it doesn't take a whole lot of movement on your part to activate the energies on our part, but we cannot make one move without your help. We cannot do anything until you call. Now, just the slightest call brings the response. So I think this is an important point, that faith, this word faith, is built by observing that it works, that the process that you have just begun is working. You see? That when you say, but it worked. I called on the force, I called on the power, and it happened. Look, it happened. And keeping this in your awareness constantly, I think is very helpful. It gives you faith that it works, and that's all that we ask. So, that's all I would say.
Thank you. Another question. Are all events in our lives God-sent, or does that only happen when one has surrendered?
Well, that too is a good question, and because most human beings don't really understand this. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that a lot of people have very strange ideas about this. All right. First of all, nothing happens outside of God. All right? Because there is nothing outside of God. The place where it could be stated, which is, these are bad words, but where it could be stated that you and God separate, is when you make that conscious choice to choose with the mechanism of your limited awareness. Now, this is your life. This is where your free will comes in. You may choose to activate a life force, to activate a choice without at all worrying about whether it is in harmony with the Tao. Alright?
Mm-hmm.
So people always say, how Hitler? If Hitler and God, if God is motivating Hitler and all of the situation in Germany, etc., well then what kind of a God is this? Now the answer is simply, that is not God. It happens within God, yes. But it is not a will of God. Because when God, this is cosmological, and I hope it fits in with what you're interested in. If not, just tell me and we'll move on. But when the first creative impulse was with God in the form of what you would call a human consciousness, the consciousness made its, out of this creation, it made its choice. Let us call it an experiment, if you will. Now, this was not an experiment on God's part. It was an experiment on this differentiated, separated will. And this is what happened. Now, you've had tremendous trouble understanding this, because it seems to you, what kind of a God is it? I mean, this is why people have trouble turning to God, because they think in terms of Hitler and the tremendous chaos, etc. Do you understand? I would like to state on behalf of the highest that I have experienced that this is not the truth. And if you would only learn this one lesson, that you have decided, you have been given this individual creative power, and this is how you have chosen to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you change your mind, any one of you, to the slightest degree, and say, I think that I have created a devil. Look at what I've created. I choose differently. I don't want any part of this anymore. Help me. Then an actual movement moves into your mind. And slowly, and you see, it is not really instantaneous, except for a very exalted few, who are very ready. But they're not likely to be in the dilemma that we're talking about either. So for most people, it is a slow process of moving, inundating slowly into the mind and making changes, a slight change here, a slight change here, so forth. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Now, it is so sad that the great churches try so hard to reconcile the God and the devil and so forth. It is very simple, and I hope I've made it clear to you. It's very hard to put these things in terms.
It's a choice of the so-called separated consciousness.
That's exactly right. Now, that consciousness at any time can say, I don't want this. I want to go back to the source. That's what I want. Now, he doesn't have to go anywhere because he's never left it, you see. So it's merely a movement of going nowhere, a journey that you don't move at all. But at the same time, it is, you see, just as you were given, you see, the Father has will. The Divine has will. You have will. Very simple. If you had no will, then you were not like the Father at all, you see, because you would have no will. The problem comes that we have watched this drama of humans acting out of their own separate wills and completely turning their minds away from the will of life, which is the will of God and harmony and the Tao. So once one decides, I don't like what I have created, because you have created it, then you simply choose something different. The minute you say, I don't know, you know, speaking not to another human, but to the vast wisdom, you know, please help, then you can say with great certainty, everything happens by God's will.
Mm-hmm.
Until that time, that is not a statement that can be made.
Mm-hmm.
It happens by your will.
May I? Isn't this exactly what you're saying, as I understand it? Isn't this exactly what we had in the stories of the prodigal son?
Oh, yes.
He was never apart from his father. He was always his father's son. But his will turned him away from his father so that he forgot it. And as soon as he turned back and said, in my father's house is everything, I will to go back, then his father came.
Precisely. Thank you. There's no other meaning. And you notice in that story is the resentment of the brother that stayed home.
Yes.
All right. Now that is an interesting point too, because so many people, that brother was just as separated in his own mind from his father as was the wanderer. And
yes,
that's very good.
Yes. Lovely. Thank
you. You have mentioned your influence for good, or the higher forces. Can we be affected by negative influences, by lower forces?
Through me?
No.
Oh. That was a good question, too. The answer is no, not through me, because of the protection that surrounds. I never would have attempted this type of teaching.
But I mean, under ordinary conditions, can a person be affected? Some say there is an organized evil in the universe, which I never was willing to accept, but it's a commonly held belief, and that these forces can influence us, or at a lower stage than that, or a lesser stage, we can be influenced by ignorant spirits, ignorant forces.
Well, first of all, there is no organized evil.
Mm-hmm.
There is no devil. There is no such thing at all.
That was my feeling, but...
Well, your feeling is right, because you see, all of those are separate. Now, what is true is that there are entities or thought forms or clusters of a thought form which have a very negative outlook generated through various conditions which we won't go into. Now, these exist both on the earth plane and in any plane that you will ever be in. But this is really not the terrible demon that the human make it into. And what really happens is, let us take, as happens often, let us take a human entity who has perhaps been silently, without telling anyone, having some kind of a war within themselves between the dark and the light, and good thoughts and bad thoughts, and, you know, a great deal of battle going on. All right. Now, at some time in this battle, a conscious decision, and I repeat, a conscious decision is made to experiment with the energies of the dark, what we would call the dark. And they are called on. Nothing can happen that you do not call on. You see, the same law applies, that applies to the highest, it must apply to the lowest.
Mm-hmm.
You must call it on. You must call it forth, or it will not enter. And just as you cannot expect the God force to move into you just at its own volition, you must call it. By the same law, you must call on the forces of God for whatever reason. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that they often do as an experiment. You know, there is a tremendous attraction in some people for experiencing a dark vibration.
Mm-hmm.
It carries with it a certain tone quality that is different.
Black magic sort of thing.
That kind of thing. It has a vibration to it that is very stimulating to the physical body. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's in your terminology, it gives them a jazz or whatever. I've heard that. The kind of thing. Now, so it is a conscious choice. But the problem comes when they get in the middle of the stream. They call these dark forces in. They've experimented with them. They've gotten a certain amount of familiarity with it. They've gotten their so-called jazz or whatever from it. And then they start feeling their body getting destroyed, their mind getting very, very chaotic, usually, is a way to experience it. And they are not always able, and this is where the sad part of it comes, they are not always able to then have the awareness to call on the forces of life to come in and change it. Because, you see, if the balance is overreached, even to a slight degree, and the negative is so much in larger proportion than the dark, than the light, then, of course, they're not willing to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have feeling of their own, you see. They are not some amorphous thing that has no feeling. They have a movement of their own that they have established now with this form. So what can happen, and what you would call exorcism, now what happens in this case is, if enough people, or even one person of sufficient strength, now power is important here, you see, sufficient power of the good, can somehow be willing to participate in a real communion with this person. I'm not speaking of a physical communion, I'm really speaking of a mental hookup with this other person. Do you understand?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if they would then move their tremendously stronger proportion of the light, which then is part of this other person's small, diminishing power of life, and at that time, in the name of this other person and themselves, because they are one, you know, we're not separate things, this other person would then call on the light, and the light then moves in and begins the process of moving the dark.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is a very difficult thing to do. All of your great teachers do it constantly for their disciples, and this is how their disciples feel so much better often in the presence of a really great master, because what he really is doing is moving his light into your dark, you see. He's helping, you know, get the balance going in the opposite direction. The problem is, of course, this cannot be done on a continuing basis. He cannot just... So it's a conscious movement on his part, and he can't keep that up continually. So therefore, then you really do have a quotation here on the earth, I think, that... being with the guru, if you're in his physical presence, you tend to feel higher than you do at other times, and that's why. Now, understand that this, let us go back to this first entity we're speaking of, that called on the dark forces.
Mm-hmm.
The exorcist, or whoever it is that is doing this, the healer and so forth.
Yes, yeah, demons.
Right. They cannot stay there. You know, they cannot continually keep in this state of communication. So when they withdraw, now that person is back on his own free will again. You see?
Mm-hmm.
You always really must make these choices for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
No one can make them for you. Otherwise free will would be a joke.
Mm-hmm.
So but you see, the difference now is they have another, in terminology, another chance.
Yeah.
They've had another chance to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
This is why the way that the insaner works with is so insane.
Yeah.
Well, this would be a little, perhaps, like helping a child to learn to walk. We take his hand and help. It's helping to get up, but he'll never learn to walk if we don't let him go again.
That's true.
Well,
that's exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is that total... But it's even been more difficult, you know,
yes,
for
yes,
in the sense of taking and putting your consciousness, because you are aware that there is a force there, a dark force is there. I mean, it is in existence, and you must be willing. And that is why it is so foolish for people without sufficient light within themselves, without sufficient understanding and power to enter into this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it from our side constantly, very unprepared people try to move into this area, and what happens is there's a transplant.
Mm-hmm.
You see. All right, example. Let's go back to our first entity who has a great deal of dark permeated with just a very slim opening of light. Another person comes in and enters into this who themselves doesn't have as much light as their ego would imagine. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if those two move together, and if together the predominance is darker, then they are both in it.
Mm-hmm.
They both have now shared the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
They're both lost.
They both have too much. So, this is another subject entirely, but it is one of the things that concerns us a lot. And the arrogance of certain so-called healers or so-called spiritual people who feel that they can go into, you see, they half believe they can do it and they half don't, you see. So they go in and they are able to work this situation and often.
Now I would like to ask whether you have any suggestions for Joy, who is a member of our quest group,
mm-hmm.
and especially in her relationships with the child, first for her spiritual growth and also for the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with her. She is a friend. I know this woman. My first statement is that she's not to worry too much about the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
The daughter is at a time. Which daughter are we speaking of?
Cindy.
The
one who's here last evening.
She is older than the
15. She's 15.
That's the one we're speaking of. Then.
Yes.
The daughter is at a very fluctuating stage of her own life, and if I may be blunt, I hope the daughter doesn't hear this tape, because I don't think it would be terribly helpful. But the daughter is, in your terminology, playing a lot of games at this stage of her life. She's coming into a certain amount of power, as all teenagers should. And she's wielding it now here, now there, and her mother is in the line of fire once in a while. I think the biggest help in this whole drama of what spiritual path to take, our suggestion to Joy is to let her do whatever she pleases and to make absolutely no comment. You see, once a child is, really realizes it's totally her own choice, and that she can't in any way be in an antagonistic situation about it, you see, it's simply her own choice, then she may become more serious about her own choice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem comes, as I perceive it, the problem comes that Joy is very much attached to the good opinion of this daughter. And she wants the daughter to think well of her and so forth. And we say, well, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Make it very clear to the daughter that she has free choice, and so does Joy. That if her daughter gives her the feeling or makes the statement that Joy is in jeopardy of her soul or whatever it might be, the way this would be worded, I'm not sure how it would be stated, then Joy's comment should be very calm and very simple and very strong. I stand responsible for my choices, as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have made an error, I will stand responsible. And it's really not your concern, my dear. You see?
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a statement made so that the child will quit wasting her time, because in a sense she's playing a game. You see, the child is playing a game. And it shouldn't be Joy's concern at this time.
Yeah.
So, do you think that covers the child?
I think so.
Yes,
it sounds great. And she has to know within herself when she makes the statement, my dear, it's my situation. I will be responsible. Thank you for your concern, but I don't really need your concern. I think you should be worrying about yourself, because your own life is about to be placed in your own hands. And so, why don't you spend your time, you know, concerning yourself about your own
Mm-hmm. Anything else about advice for Joy in other ways?
Well, I think Joy is doing fine. Now, I don't know if Joy feels this. I'm sure she has fluctuations at times, but we are very pleased. There's been a tremendous change from our perception in the last year within her. And the light is moving through her, and you can see it as you envision her. You can see it in her face, I think. At least we can.
Yeah.
And I think this is a very significant movement for her. I think that it is time for her to give serious consideration to a specific discipline. Now, I'm not meaning that in the negative sense of no meat and no sexual relationships and no wine and so forth. That isn't what I'm referring to. I'm referring to an inner discipline. I think she's at the stage where she should make a selection based on the best response that she has at this time. She has a quite a good array to choose from. You know, she has various methods, so-called methods, that she has read about or heard about or that you've told her from. And I think that for the next few years, I mean, she doesn't have to make the choice that will last her a lifetime, you see. But I think she needs to begin a very definite approach to something. And whatever feels the strongest within her being as she reviews them, then I think she should try this. Now, if she tries one and it doesn't seem to be working for her, she should feel very free to drop it and move on to something else. These are not such tight compartments, you see. And I know, and we feel very strongly that she's ready for a very serious commitment to some kind of definite discipline, whether it be even something as simple as a definite meditation time every morning, even if it means she has to rise before the family, or, in other words, a stronger trust on her part will begin to bring results. And then the results, of course, will increase her desire to do it. And, you know, we're very tricky.
That would be a symbol of commitment, which would
encourage
her own growth.
That's the point. I mean, she needs to make this symbol of commitment. It's mostly for herself.
Yes.
to say, yes, I commit to this. I'm willing to do this. This is what I want to do. I know it will be difficult. I won't always want to do it. But this is what I'm doing now, and please help me.
Mm-hmm.
And constantly turning within. You know, she can do that very well.
Mm-hmm. And another question about another one of our quest group, Doris, who has been a serious seeker, I think, for some time. Any suggestions for her further growth?
Well, now, Doris is different. Doris is really a different situation. Doris has made a commitment. Doris has made a commitment on a deeper level to the light in the past. Now, it's true that she hasn't made a commitment on the surface areas, as you see. I mean, we would not call for any particular strain that she belongs to in one of the rays at this time. But the commitment has been made within herself, and I think that the situation differs. One of the things that Doris really could best benefit by, and I think she's had inklings of it, is she has very good perception, and in her perception, if she could constantly do what I suggested on the tapes of yesterday, the moment-to-moment,
mm-hmm.
opening to the moment, is Doris's way,
mm-hmm.
and she can do it. And she is so much more prepared to do it than most people. There might even be a reluctance on her part to really immerse herself in doing it for fear of not being able to fulfill responsibilities of one kind or another. I don't think she should worry about this.
No.
But that might be a fear, and if it is, would you please tell her that there is no need to fear, that all these transitions are made gently and gradually, and her entire life situation will begin to adjust. Now, you see, Matt, I would like to interject another error that humans make. They look at the situation in the reverse. They say, well, if my situation outside would change, then I will then be able to make my commitment. By this I mean, they say, if I was given a house that had a meditation room in it, then I would begin to meditate. All right? Now, I'm glad you both laughed. You see the point. It's very, very simple. But many people don't see this. They say, if I didn't have the kind of job I have, then I could give it a moment-to-moment awareness. Now, the reverse is true. We are not going to go about bouncing people from job to job and house to house unless we know that the commitment is so strong that that is what's necessary. Be assured, and I would like to assure anyone who is a truly serious seeker, if they will make the slightest effort toward any of these things, if their job is in depth, if their job is truly a hindrance, their job will be changed. All right?
Yes.
Once they put out the call that says, my life is yours, whatever you wish, I will do. Once that call is really made from the heart, all things will change. You know, the speaker may wonder why she's been given another house.
Mm-hmm.
And she shouldn't wonder, because she's made this call, and she has sat in her living room and been unable to have even the slightest corner for solitude when she's in the midst of a teeming household that all look to her for support. Even in her sleep, they're asking her for support. She has no place of her own, but she has a place now because she has a greenhouse. And she will be able to move into that greenhouse, sit down, and meditate, and she won't be able to hear a thing. Now, she didn't think of that when the house was... In fact, she didn't even think of the house. It was her husband who wished it. But this is the point. You see, this is the kind of thing that we will take care of.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true in Doris's case. It's true in anyone's case. If there is something in their life that is a real limitation, a real hindrance, we'll take care of it. But we will not take care of it unless they begin the process and show that they are dedicated to the pursuance of it to the point that, if I may be perfectly frank, that it's worth our time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We're not going to continually be doing these things when the recipient just says, oh, thank you very much, and then forgets all about it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we need to have this consolation. Now, many people in your group and many people in the world are under the impression that life is a crystallized future, you see, and that it's just a series of events that they move through like an automaton. This is totally untrue. This is totally untrue. It isn't even true that you're necessarily going to meet people. That, you know, that's another one of the things that they say, well, it was destined that we meet and so forth. Well, it is true that the people that you do meet and that have a tremendous influence in your life, there has been destiny in that, yes. It's a pre-planned arrangement. But also it is true that there are people who you were to have met that you have not met. You see?
Yeah.
This story that when the student is ready, the teacher appeared is very true.
Mm-hmm.
There are many people who we have hoped would have teachers that they could meet either on this plane or on the next. You know, either through some kind of a dream revelation. We work with dreams often in order to convince people of things. But either in the dream state or just merely in a meditative state or in physical life, if they really need one, if they need one in physical form, that they haven't met with. And the reason is that they have not used what they've been given. So therefore, it doesn't happen. You see,
yeah.
Nothing is so preordained that we can assume that we will be taken through like a queen in a coat down the street. You know, it isn't so. One has to make one's commitment over and over and over again. When you realize that you have failed in a commitment, instead of spending one moment scathing against yourself, just begin to do that which you are feeling badly about not doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. Okay.
Anything else?
Mm-hmm. You have lovely children.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We
feel so. Well, I was referring to all four of them.
Yes.
Because I have an acquaintance with the other two.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for answering.
Is there any meaningful message to be given from them?
No, they're not. They're truly past.
Yeah.
They've moved way on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're just wonderful. And I just wanted you to know that. Mm-hmm. In contact. There's nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
They look forward to it, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The speaker today, we were laughing on this side, the speaker today was startled when she said to you in a conversation, won't it be wonderful when you pass over and the boys will be there? And we were laughing because, of course, that's the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be wonderful, but they're not close now. They have much away.
Would
well, they're in wonderful realms. Yes.
Would you have anything to say to our daughters that I'll be seeing this week?
Well, one would be a bit doubtful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But send her our love and the love of the boy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And to Nancy, who would be less doubtful.
Yes.
Are you sure you want this?
Yes.
Okay. She's too busy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's fine. It keeps her occupied and so forth, but... we would be happier if she settled down a little because she has so much, oh, so much potential in the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
But she's too busy, and we don't like to intrude on such things. But since you asked, I will take this opportunity to say that she's too busy. She should have a greater periods of quietude for herself. There's so much that would make her life so much more meaningful than all of this that she's doing,
yeah.
You know, the medical business and the... And the there's something else that seems to be in her mind that, well, it doesn't matter, but whatever, all these things that are in her mind now that are filling her, so if she would give us a chance, we would fill it with something much more worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
Something would give her a great deal more joy, but let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But
is it because she feels a sense of obligation to try to help to provide for the family? Do you think that she's so busy?
That's a great deal. But you see, it's because she doesn't believe in us either.
Uh-huh.
You see, if she believed in us, she'd know that we'd help.
That she would provide.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, but then again, what we've just spoken of,
mm-hmm.
you see, this commitment thing that we were speaking of, the fact that she is doing it herself, then we have to allow her to do it herself.
Mm-hmm.
When the time comes, as I suspicion it will, soon, when the time comes that she says, no, part of my day is for the divine, and turns that over, then then we can begin. But we cannot begin until she is ready for it.
And would there be any significance, what about the Baha'i group to which she has been devoted to a certain extent anyway? Is that a good commitment there, or?
Well, it's weak. It's not.
Her commitment is not strong.
It's not strong. And the reason is that she's really not an organization person.
Yes.
She's an individual person. She's a very private person. And it's this kind of person that we work the best with, you see, because she is best able to listen to us. And she would be able to make a very clear hookup. But she just hasn't taken the time, you know. The organization is, again, a busyness,
you see,
and that isn't really what we want. We don't want busy people.
Mm-hmm.
We need people who are able to be in quietude when that is what is called for, and to be dynamic when that is called for.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones who are always into being dynamic usually run out of energy on a deep level and don't have any way of replenishing it from the highest source, which your daughter could do. I mean, I'm thinking of Nancy now.
Yes.
She's extremely receptive. And you might take this tape if you wanted to and play it, and we love her, and we're waiting.
Mm-hmm.
But she's too busy for us. You tell her she's too busy.
Anything else before we go?
No, but this is our last time for a while because the speech is leaving, but I look forward to next time.
I was going to ask one question, that in case the necessities could arise, would it work well for you if I would use if I took over the induction and would be able to contact you, would it work as
Well, you are very much a one unit. And
yes.
And the speaker has the same trust in you that she has in him.
Thank you.
In fact, she loves you equally.
Thank you.
And that's a lot. would you suggest to this time that she be totally relaxed and totally at ease, and that any anxiety about any misinformation, she mustn't worry, that her prayer was that she would only give the highest, and that's what she did.
Yeah.